Hi, welcome to Narrating Ordained Women. This is Rachel Morrissey, and I'm spelling Cami Ashby for a couple of episodes. Just so you know a little about me, I live in New York. I am a radio producer. This is career number 3, so let's hope I got it right this time. I am really excited to be a part of this, and I was really excited to get to talk to Zach Noyes. His profile really touched me.
Zach, so why don't you go ahead and just, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, where you're from and about your family, about your background.
Okay. My name is Zach Noyes. I was born in and grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah. My family and I have been members, active and believing members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints for our whole lives. I am one of 4 children of my parents. I have a brother and 2 sisters. And I, as I said, I lived in Salt Lake City, grew up here, and lived here the first 18 years of my life until I went away for school and then a mission in the middle of school there. I went to school in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
I'm gonna go across the country to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
That's what I do, yep.
What made you decide that? Why didn't you? I mean, a lot of people stick around Utah, go to that nice in-state tuition, or go to BYU.
Well, I went to a school called the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia, and it's the kind of school that if you get in, you go. And so that was a driving force behind it. I certainly grew up and was interested in seeing a little bit more of the world than Salt Lake City. I did never hold anything too terribly against it or anything, but I've certainly been interested in seeing the world, and Philadelphia is a part of it, I guess. There's a famous quote of someone who said, "I would like to see." It's from a movie. Well, I can't remember what the movie it's called right now, but I should look it up. But it's an old Western or something, and they ask a man if he has any last requests, and he says, very cleverly, sort of, if you're on the gallows, say, "Well, I'd like to see Paris before I die." And I can't remember how it shakes down, but eventually he says, "Oh, Philadelphia will do," which, well, I guess when you're on the gallows is just as good. But Philadelphia is a great place. I loved it there so much. And I lived there for about a decade. That time there was interrupted a little bit when I went on a Mormon mission. I served in Dallas, Texas, Spanish-speaking. Not Spanish-speaking very well at the time, but...
Who can let you go on a mission? Did they, like, hold your place
yeah.
for you?
Yeah, or? Like most schools, at least in the United States, they'll hold your place for 2 years without any questions asked, really, particularly if you're going for religious reasons.
That's
nice. I know that a big part of the reason that they changed the missionary age was because in some other countries, schools weren't as accommodating of that and forced people to reapply or let credits expire when people went on missions. So they were sending missionaries in the UK at 18 for several years before they lowered the age in the US. And but I didn't, you know, it was no problem at all for me to go away for 2 years. It certainly was strange when I came back and all my classmates were seniors and I was starting my second year. but it was great. I loved school there and I loved the city. And about a year after I got home, I married my high school sweetheart.
And did she wait for you?
Something like that. we ended up getting married. We dated in high school and we liked each other throughout, even beyond high school. We still liked each other, and even today, at times, we still like each other.
Everyone's
yeah. Like I think it's like alternate Wednesdays at this point or something. But no, we're very happy. But I married her, and she came out and to Philadelphia with me, and I graduated, and we stuck around out there because we enjoyed it out there, and we're happy. And then 2 years ago, we had our first little girl, Clara, and we decided we wanted free babysitters, so we moved back to Salt Lake City so we could be closer to our family. But free babysitting wasn't the entire reason for that decision, in fact, but most of but it's certainly related,
Yeah, well, you know.
which is that we wanted to be closer to our families. All of our both of our parents are here, my parents and her parents, and in addition, actually, right now, all of our siblings on either side of the family also live in the Salt Lake area, so it's really nice.
That is
It's
nice.
great to be around.
Yeah, it is nice. I live in New York, and the one drawback to New York is that it is not very close to my family.
It's really nice to be back with them here. They're all, we get along very well, everyone on either side of the family. So it's really fun. And recently, about 2 months ago, a little over that now, I guess. Oh, yes, not 3 months yet, but coming up on it, my wife and I had our second child, a little baby boy. So one girl, one boy, and we're done.
Wow, how nice. You're done. You're like, in case you wanted to ask me more, we're done.
Oh yeah. I don't. I think that two kids is pretty good, I think,
That's
but
great.
independent of anything else. But two pregnancies is too many.
Well, that's a new take. Yeah, so do you ever miss Philadelphia?
I miss Philadelphia. So of the. Of the 18 or so waking hours of each day, I miss it about 17 of those. I really loved Philadelphia. I don't know about that I have a particular affinity for back east versus out west or down south or up north or whatever sort of preposition in front of a direction you want to say, but I really did love Philadelphia. I thought it was a wonderful ta city that we really enjoyed and took full advantage of all the opportunities that we had there, and we certainly miss them. And I very, very much miss my wonderful Philadelphia ward.
Now,
Not to speak ill of my wards that I've had in Salt Lake or anything, but it was a very special ward in Philadelphia that anyone who's been a part of it will tell you all about until your ears bleed.
what made it so special?
It was a really good community. It was a pretty good split of people who were, there were a lot of people who were transplanted from various places to do school or for work and so forth, and that sort of helped have a really tight family sort of feeling. You sort of use the ward as your family. But even more special than that was just the converts that who had joined the church in the area were such wonderful people. It was a large population of people who were refugees from Liberia in particular that lived in our neighborhood and were and it was just there were some really special people that I certainly never almost certainly never would have come across or become close to if not for my time in that ward. And got some very close, dear friends there that helped me to learn a lot more about the gospel than I think I ever could have from people who took the same seminary classes as I did.
What did you think you learned about the gospel in Philly that you didn't get from seminary?
Well, the I think that one of the biggest things, and certainly that has pushed me to be involved more with and believe more in the idea of the ordination of women and so forth, that it really helped to emphasize the point that the gospel is truly for everyone and the church is for everyone. It needs to be a big enough tent to cover the whole world. It certainly needs to be a big enough tent to cover anyone who lives in your neighborhood then, and it certainly needs to be a big enough tent to include anyone you've ever gotten in a fight with or that you tend to ignore. The gospel needs to be that big of a tent, and so does the church. And I think that really was driven home to me dramatically as I served in different capacities in that ward.
kind of a new sense of Zion should expand its borders, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I can totally see that. Okay, so what inspired you to post a profile on ordained women?
Okay, well, it was a very long process to come from different beliefs and things that I'd had in life to the point when I decided to finally post a profile. Like many, many people, certainly not like all people, but like many people who come from a similar Mormon background to me, I didn't really think about it too much throughout most of my growing years and so forth. But I remember it was a question that I was asked quite regularly on my mission. And I tried to give sort of the, as close as there is to an official answer that we have, and sort of repeated different talking points that I'd heard at different times. Not all of those ever sat well with me, but but people were asking the question sincerely, so I wanted to give them a sincere answer. And so I started a very, very serious and long drawn out time when I was trying to find out what the answer to this question was. I wanted to be able to give people a real answer when they asked that. I had serious investigators who were asking it, and I wanted to know. So I studied, and I studied in the scriptures. It's certainly not the only thing I studied, but over the course of many, many, many years that extended far beyond the end of my mission, I studied and made my way through any scripture I could find that with who should be ordained, and ultimately concluded after that studying and after a lot of prayer that I didn't believe there was any doctrinal slash scriptural basis for the idea that only men should be ordained to offices in the priesthood. And then, not that long after, I know that I have some other friends who had profiles up long before I did, and someone asked me if I wanted to post one, and I wrote one, and it sat in a little draft form on my computer for a long time. Not because I was nervous about what people might think or anything, but a big part of the reason that I sort of let it sit there is that I wanted it to be short, and I wanted it to be succinct, and I wanted it to be personal, and I wasn't ever really sure if I was capturing. The reasons are so many, and it's so complicated that I was never, I just never felt that good about it. But one day I sort of just swallowed my pride and was like, well, this is going to have to be good enough. And so I wrote about the way that I feel about my daughter and about the church and how I would love for her to have every opportunity available to her. I really believe in I am a firm believer in the blessings of the priesthood, and it certainly blessed my life. And the fullness of the blessings of the priesthood in my life certainly are not encapsulated in the fact of my baptism or my taking out my endowment in the temple. The fullness of the blessings of the priesthood in my life, perhaps even the majority of the blessings in my life, have come as I've exercised the priesthood. If I were going to bear my testimony about priesthood and sacrament meeting, I would probably talk about some special experiences I've had giving people blessings, or serving in elders' quorum presidencies, or as an executive secretary in a ward where I knelt down with the bishop and his counselors, and we prayed about who should serve and which callings, and the way that the Spirit of the Lord was there. And those were all blessings that were available to me, not because of the existence of the priesthood on the earth, but because of my ordination in it. And I would love, I would love for that to be available to everyone.
So you really feel like the one of the largest blessings of the priesthood is to be ordained into it so that you have the use of it to serve.
Absolutely, yes. I think that it's common for people to say, when they prepared a lesson or a talk, to talk about how they learned more and were blessed more in the preparation of that than they were by what than anyone could have been by listening to that lesson or that talk. Every time I've ever heard a bishop bear their testimony as they're released from that calling, they've spoken about the blessings that it's brought to their lives to serve in that calling. I'm a little skeptical of that. I think that being a bishop would be a nightmare. But no, and taking my tongue out of my cheek there. There's real, real tangible blessings that are associated and with performing priesthood ordinances. And those are a big part of the blessings of the priesthood. And I think that everyone, if in order to be blessed by the priesthood in its fullest capacity,
right.
you need to be able to exercise the priesthood.
Right. When I was younger and I would notice it, I would be like, well, it isn't so much about what I get, it's about what I can do. So I think that shows a lot of insight, actually. So since you, when did you post your profile?
Let's see. It would have been early 2014, so I would guess that it was February or March of this year.
Oh, so it's not too long ago. It's pretty recent. So it was right before the April action.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay. So well, what was the response? Did you tell your friends or your family? Or I mean, you mentioned a little bit about your family, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I never got any pushback, certainly never got any pushback from my family. And my immediate family, we've always been, you know, some people would call us Sunstone Mormons, I guess, except for the fact that we never read Sunstone or anything. But, you know, we've always been very clear in my family. It was always clear in my household where the gospel is and where the church is. There's the same murkiness that exists just in those concepts in general, but it was always very clear to us that the restoration is an ongoing thing, that the church is not a perfect institution, and certainly the people in the church are not perfect. And so we've always believed there's room for people with pretty much whatever kind of belief you can cram into Mormonism within the gospel. And an interesting story sort of along the lines of showing how, you know, myself and my family have been in some ways what someone might call non-conventional. I remember one of the very first times I gave a talk in sacrament meeting, you know, when those youth talks you give when you're like 12 or 16 or whatever, I don't remember at all what I spoke about or anything. I was probably as good a youth speaker as anyone was, but that's not really saying that much. But I gave a talk, and I didn't think I said anything particularly strange or earth-shattering. And when my method for preparing a talk back then was, in fact, just find as many scriptures as you can on the subject and read them, pretty much. And I remember after I gave that talk, a sweet old lady in the ward came up to me and shook my hand and said, "That was a very nice talk. I agreed with almost everything you said." And I don't know what I said that she, you know, that's a very complimentary statement, but it's only that little negative part in there that really ever sticks out to anyone who would hear that. And that's certainly the part that I took out of that. But my, you know, my family was always, they were always Democrats growing up in Utah. So we were pretty bad already, but you know, they've always been a family that stresses the importance of tolerance and of love for everyone. And I don't know that anyone in my family is necessarily about to post their own profiles or anything, but certainly the feeling is that that is a more than acceptable belief to hold. And so I imagine on my wife's side of the family, I'm viewed in somewhat more negative light, but they're nice enough to keep those thoughts to themselves. But I, you know, received very, when I posted the profile, I received very good feedback from anyone that I received it from. I posted it on my Facebook page and immediately got many, many likes and stuff from people, mostly from friends of mine who were not members of the church, as most of my friends in my social network from college and so forth are not Mormons, and thought they all liked it. And I had several of them contact me and, for the first time ever, in many cases, speak to me about the church, wanting to know more about us, more about Mormons, more about the priesthood. It was, you know, it was quite frankly one of the greatest missionary tools that I've had since I came home from my mission, that opened more doors to sharing the gospel than I've had in some time. And it was a really special kind of thing. Certainly I got some pushback from some of my Mormon friends, certainly not from all. ultimately, certainly when people started flaming, if anyone ever started flaming me for it, I imagine that that undid some of the goodwill for Mormons that were was that my friends experienced when I posted it.
Although that's fascinating, it's interesting. I grew up in the Democrat family in the ward too, the token Democrat family in the ward, and we always grew up. My mom used to quote different things from family lore and pioneer history, and she loved quotes of Brigham Young, and things that he said that were like any truth. Is part of the gospel, whether or not we're saying it or not. Any truth is part of the gospel. So we always had this sense that the church was and the gospel was much bigger than just the church. That the church was an organization, but that the gospel was truth. And so that was a different thing. It wasn't they were not one and the same.
Yeah, that's always been a big thing that we've believed too. And in some senses, of course, the church, the gospel is much larger than the church. In other senses, it's much smaller than the church. In the sense that, the gospel of Jesus Christ, that's actually one of the missionary lessons, is about how the gospel of Jesus Christ includes faith, repentance, baptism, the gift of the Holy Ghost, and atonement. And that's the gospel of Jesus Christ according to the third missionary lesson in Preach My Gospel. And that's certainly not all encompassing. That doesn't include girls' camp. That doesn't include the Boy Scouts of America. It doesn't even include tithing or things like that. I'm not to say that any of those things are unimportant or wrong, but they are not the
Yeah,
gospel.
exactly. So, since Kate Kelly's excommunication, have you had any different responses since that?
Well, I haven't, not terribly. Certainly. By that point, the novelty of me being associated with and agreeing with people involved in ordained women was old news to many people. Since, these days, if it happened more than 3 days ago, then who cares anymore? It's not on my Facebook feed anymore. But I've had conversations with people who seemed very interested in learning a lot more about the church and priesthood, and Mormons are, since they read that news, are thinking that it's not as interesting to them anymore, that maybe Mormons aren't as open and accepting as they were, as it looked for a minute there. And I think that's very unfortunate. I had friends who I think would have been, who sort of were looking like they might want me to ask the missionaries to stop by their house, but they certainly aren't speaking that way anymore. And that's been sad for me. And it's certainly been sad to me when mostly cousins, it seems like, have told me, you're free to just leave the church anytime you want. And I, of course, said, well, not really when you have a testimony like I do. That's not really an option for me because I
Right.
believe in this.
So, what do you think the future holds for OW? What's your vision for what OW will do in the church?
Well, I struggle with that question primarily because I think the principle of ordaining women is so much bigger than the organization of ordained women. I think that there are, I think that across the world there's probably hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of members who believe that someday, in some form at least, women can or should be ordained to the priesthood. But many of them, even still, probably, as prominent as OW has been in the news, I think that many of them haven't even heard of it. And so this idea is not going away. this idea has been here since the beginning of the church. The idea of who should and shouldn't be ordained to the priesthood has been a question that the church has grappled with and adapted and changed in meaningful ways. And I'm not just referring to the idea of the 1978 revelation or anything, but even long before that, the idea of who should be ordained a deacon versus who should be ordained a teacher versus who should be ordained a priest, and should every man be ordained or should just some men be ordained? And all of these have been moving targets and have been topics of great consideration throughout all of church history, and I think that conversation is just going to continue. If ordainedwomen.org did take that website down tomorrow, that certainly would not be the end of this discussion. I'm very grateful that they slash we, I don't know, ever know. Obviously, Ordained Women isn't a mem isn't a organization with membership dues or anything. I consider myself a part of it in that I have a profile on it, but I'm not a leader of the organization. I believe in the most important thing that gives its name and stuff, but it's bigger than that. It's I think that I think that a lot of the work that has been done in the group has been incredible. It's certainly been amazing how it's moved this question that's been, in many senses, on the periphery of Mormonism, but certainly in the lived experiences of every member ever. I think that it's been great that we've been able to move that discussion out of just the heart-wrenching thing that you pray to God about and ask why, to a place where we can speak about it in our homes with other members of the church and in our, in our communities. I think that's been some wonderful stuff that Ordained Women has accomplished with that, and I can only see that accelerating. I can only see that people will continue to have those discussions, and it's going to be in no small part thanks to wonderful work that's been being done by the real heroes of this organization.
You have a lot of faith that this is going to move forward. You think the church is capable of this.
Oh, I know the church is capable of it. I think the number of as it's discussed, the number of people who not only have this belief but start publicly admitting it will only grow. I think that's the more that you speak about an idea, the more it enters the realm of legitimate discourse, even if it's con if it, the discourse is consistently saying that it's not legitimate, that's a way to talk about it, and it's bringing it into the mainstream. Even by calling it fringe, brings it into the mainstream. And we certainly are not fringe. There have been millions of members of the church throughout its history who've believed this and will continue to believe it. And now I think in ways that have never been that it to an extent that has never been true in the past, will continue to say those things that they believe and get more people thinking about the issue and praying about the issue. And that will only, that in some cases I can imagine that might get people to dig in their heels more along the status quo, but I certainly don't think that that's in every case, or even in the, it might not even be true in the majority. I think that increasingly, as more people see members of the church they know and love, and who they know have testimonies of the church, are saying that they believe this, it becomes more real and more believable to people. I think that increases faith in the on the earth, and it certainly enhances my testimony of the priesthood to think about how it really it can and should be for everyone.
Thank you so much, Zach. It's been amazing to talk to you. I rarely encounter somebody with so much hope still. So it's really nice to hear somebody who has so much hope for the organization.
Well, and everyone in the organization would I, that I all the leaders of the organization, I think, would reiterate what I'm saying, which is that I absolutely do have faith in the organization of ordained women's capabilities, but that's not that that to me that's so that that's you know that's ancillary, that's an appendage to the larger question, which is the fate of Mormon of women in the Mormon Church. And I think that as more revelation is received, as more people ask for revelation, as more women start to see their true divine potential, their individual worth, then they will it will only make their enhance their faith in the church and in their place in it. And ultimately, whether ordainedwomen.org is an active, still being updated website in 5 years or 10 years or 15 years or whenever more meaningful revelation is received on the subject of women's ordination, isn't as important as that those conversations are continuing, and that someday I believe women will be ordained.
I think that's wonderful. Thank you so much, Zach. I really appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure on my part too. I'm always happy to share the gospel.